just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government.
Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The People versus James Tolland.
Tonight's famous jury trial is the case of the People versus James Tolland. Everyone is familiar with the racketeers, the overlords of the underworld, preying on legitimate business. But to most people, the master criminal, the man who organizes a crime ring and plots its robberies, is a character found only in detective stories. Tonight's famous jury trial brings you the story of James Tolland, who was charged with being the mastermind of one of the most clever crime rings that ever operated. The district attorney began his opening address to the jury.
The defendant in this trial is James Tolland. Many of you, perhaps, may have heard of James Tolland as a successful real estate operator, a solid family man, a pillar of his church and of his community. Few, until a short while ago, knew that James Tolland was also a jewel thief. He is on trial at the moment for the theft of a necklace belonging to Mrs. Nicholas Smythe of this city. But the evidence will clearly show that this was only one of a series of robberies planned and organized by this man. For James Tolland was the mastermind of a crime ring that specialized in jewel robberies. He furnished the brains and the capital to operate the ring. So cleverly was his identity hidden from the other members of the ring that the police might never have been able to lay his crimes at his door if it had not been for a lucky accident. The police had been working for some time on a series of unsolved jewel robberies without success. And then one day, a few months ago, a girl was admitted to the city hospital, her body pierced by bullets. She said she wanted to make a confession. And so the police and I were brought to her bedside to hear what she had to say.
My name is Esther Lewis.
The society photographer?
Yeah. I want to tell you about the robberies.
What robberies?
Oh, a lot of robberies. This, my diamond necklace, a lot of others. It was always jewelry we took.
You were a jewel thief?
Yeah. I was in it from the first. It all began 2 years ago when I met a man named Jim Tolland. We fell in love with each other.
Jim Tolland? Not the real estate man.
Yeah. Well, he was married, of course, but we saw a lot of each other anyway. And then one day when I was in his apartment, he said to me...
Look here, Esther, you're always bothering me for money.
Oh, just a few bills here and there. They're so small I didn't think you'd mind.
That's just it. A woman like you oughtn't have to worry over small bills. Why don't you make yourself some money?
I get more for photographing debutantes and society matrons than any other photographer in New York. And I work very hard.
Oh, chicken feed. You could make a great deal more if you wanted to. Real money.
Oh, Jim.
Do you like these people you photograph?
No, I hate them. Fussy, ill-tempered snobs.
Would you mind if they were to lose some of their jewelry?
No. I couldn't steal. I'd be caught.
No one wants you to steal. There wouldn't be any risk for you.
What would I have to do?
Look, you're asked into the houses of these wealthy people all the time to photograph them before their weddings or coming out parties and things like that.
Yeah?
I want you to insist that they wear their jewels when you take their pictures. Find out where the jewels are kept. Get a picture of a room if you can. Make careful notes on the plan of the house, the daily routine of the family, that sort of thing, and send the information to me. That's all you have to do, and there's no risk for you. If a robbery happens later, well, it'll have no connection with you.
How much would you pay me?
20% of what we get on each job. It'll be plenty of money.
All right, I'll do it.
Good. Now, here's what I want you to do. When you go to a house to photograph it.
I've worked with the gang ever since.
Who were the other members besides Tolland?
I don't know. I didn't know anyone else in the ring.
Do you know how the ring operated?
Well, Jim told me that he made the plans for the crime. Then he sent the plans on to a man who owned a jewelry store. That man worked through someone in the underworld to hire the criminals who did the actual robbery.
What became of the stolen jewels?
They were sent to the underworld chief, who sent them on to the jewelry store man. He changed them so they couldn't be recognized and then offered them for sale.
Who was this jewelry store man?
I don't know.
Did Tolan shoot you?
He ordered it, I guess.
Why?
I demanded that Jim give me a bigger share of the payoff money.
Did he agree?
No, he refused me outright. He was very angry and rude, so I thought I'd show him. I wrote anonymous letters to the police telling them of the next two robberies we planned. Well, I had burglars were arrested. Jim became very nervous. He didn't know what was going wrong. Finally, I thought the time was ripe to let him know the truth.
I don't understand it, Esther. There's no possible way for there to be a leak. And yet the police know exactly when we plan to pull off a robbery.
I think maybe I could find a way to stop that leak, Jim.
You? What do you know about it?
If I were to get 40% of the payoff, I think I can fix it so the police won't know our plans.
You double-crossed
me. Now, don't be unreasonable, Jim. You can't get along without me, you know. Just asking a fair share.
You'll get what's fair. I promise you.
40%?
No. That's not what I was thinking about, Esther. But it'll be fair. Quite fair.
I saw then that he meant to kill me. I got out of the apartment somehow. I began to walk towards the nearest police station. I thought I'd confess before he had a chance to do anything to me. Well, I was so scared I didn't even dare take a taxi. I walked, almost running. Finally, I reached the street where the police station was. I was almost there, and then...
Hey, miss.
Yeah?
Your share from the bus.
Esther Lewis died a few minutes after telling this story. She had given us the name of the mastermind, James Tolland, and an outline of how the ring worked. The police have now untangled this criminal maze, and we will prove to you beyond any doubt the guilt of this man who is now on trial. And I'll call the first witness for the state, Officer John Davis. John Davis? John Davis?
John Davis, take the stand, please. Yes, I only swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God.
I do. Your name and occupation?
John Davis. I'm a detective with the 12th Precinct Police Force.
Were you assigned to investigate the defendant in this trial, James Tolland?
Yeah.
Did you find anything to connect him with any crime?
Well, not for a long time. Then we noticed he was getting a number of checks from some corporation calling itself Unique Developments Limited.
These checks seemed to you suspicious?
Yes. Well, it didn't seem probable that a company would declare so many dividends in such a short time. We checked on the corporation and found that it was not listed anywhere.
Were you able to trace the corporation any further?
Yes. We knew the bank the dividend checks were drawn on. And I was sent there to wait for someone to bring in a deposit. Well, about a week went by, and then one day a young fella came in and made a deposit in the Unique Developments account. I followed him and trailed him to a jewelry store where he worked as a clerk.
What was the name of this store?
Donovan's. It was owned and run by a man named Henry Donovan, who specialized in unique and very expensive jewelry, which he designed himself.
What did you do then?
Well, I reported to my chief, of course. And we swore out a search warrant against the place.
Did you take part in the raid on this store?
Yes.
What did you find?
We found a secret compartment in the jewelry vault. In this compartment, there were a number of items, all of them reported as stolen in recent months. Also, we found the plans for the theft of a diamond necklace belonging to Mrs. Nicholas Smythe.
Was Mrs. Smythe's necklace among these stolen items?
Yes, it was.
Can you identify this necklace I hold here?
Yes, that's a Smythe diamond necklace.
Your Honor, I offer this necklace in evidence.
It may be received and marked.
Are these papers I have here the plans for the robbery you found?
Yes.
I will note for the benefit of the jury that the plan of the robbery consists of several items. First, there is this photograph of Mrs. Smythe wearing her necklace. Then another photograph of a corner of the room with a circle drawn around a panel on the wall behind which the jewels were kept. Then there are the notes and directions written out in block printing to disguise the handwriting. The notes read as follows. Quote, room is in front of house facing 63rd Street, left-hand side, second floor. Family dines at 8. No one upstairs for at least half an hour after that. Necklace not usually locked up, just hidden in compartment behind the panel. Unquote. And here is the plan. I quote, jewels must be taken between 8 and 8:30. The second story man who takes the jewels will cross at once to the bedroom window facing the alley and throw them down to a man who will be standing below. That is the plan for the Smythe robbery, for which no one was arrested until this plan was found. That's all, Mr. Davis. The defense counsel may cross-examine.
There was no cross-examination by the defense attorney, and the state called their next witness, the jeweler, Henry Donovan.
Mr. Donovan, you own the jewelry store known as Donovan's?
Yes.
Where did you get the stolen jewelry found in your safe?
I bought it.
You bought it?
Yes.
Where did you get the plans for the Smythe robbery?
What plans?
These plans I have right here.
I never saw them before in my life.
What? Mr. Donovan, didn't you sign a confession in my office stating that you got these plans from James Tolland?
Yes.
Did you sign that confession of your own free will?
No. I was beaten until I agreed to sign it, as you very well know.
Your Honor, this witness is perjuring himself. I ask a recess so that I may bring witnesses to the stand to prove that no coercion was used to force a confession from this witness.
Order! Order! Very well, Mr. District Attorney. I declare a recess until you have located your witnesses.
The court was in an uproar as Henry Donovan, the key witness for the state, repudiated the confession he'd made to the district attorney and insisted that he had bought the stolen jewelry, knew nothing of James Tolland and his alleged crime ring. The judge declared a recess so that the district attorney could get witnesses to prove Henry Donovan signed the confession of his own free will. We return to the courtroom in just a moment. And sold it in his store, repudiated the confession he'd made, accusing Tolland as the key figure behind the ring, stating that he had been forced to sign the confession by the police. The district attorney brought witness after witness to the stand to testify that no force or brutality was used by the police, that Donovan signed the confession of his own free will. But Donovan stuck stubbornly to his story. He had bought the stolen jewelry, not knowing that it was stolen. He had never seen the plans for the robbery before. He knew Tolland only slightly in a business way. Exasperated and furious, the district attorney preferred charges of perjury against his disastrous witness. And then the defense opened the case for James Tolland by calling the defendant himself to the stand.
Mr. Tolland, did you know the society photographer Esther Lewis?
Yes.
Did you ever suggest that she use her entree to fashionable houses to take pictures for you, which you could use in a criminal way?
Certainly not.
Did you ever do anything to this woman which would cause her to be your deadly enemy?
Yes, I'm afraid I did.
What did you do to cause this feeling on the part of Miss Lewis?
Well, when we first met a couple of years ago, we were very much attracted to each other. Things went on like that until a few months ago. Then I told Miss Lewis that we ought not to see each other anymore. I said it wasn't fair to her and pointed out that I was a married man and all that. But she saw what I really meant, that I was sick and tired of her, and, well, it made her furious.
Did she make any threats against you at that time?
Yes, she threatened to get even with me or kill me even, but
Well, she was so hysterical, I naturally didn't pay much attention to what she was saying.
During your friendship with Miss Lewis, did you know of her criminal activities?
I had no inkling of them until the police told me that Miss Lewis had accused me on her deathbed of being her partner in crime.
I see. Now, Mr. Tarland, it has been testified that you own stock in a corporation called Unique Developments Limited. How did you come into possession of this stock?
I bought it.
From whom?
Henry Donovan.
Under what circumstances?
He told me that he needed capital to expand his business and offered me the stock in return.
Did you know that Donovan had stolen jewelry in his possession?
Certainly not.
Your witness. Thank you. Mr. Tolland, a search of your house disclosed a very large sum of money in cash in your safe. An examination of your books showed that this money was far more than you could have made from any legitimate source. How do you account for the money?
Well, some of it was probably income and some of it was capital.
You kept thousands of dollars worth of idle capital in your safe in cash?
Yeah.
For what purpose?
Well, sometimes I needed large amounts of cash in my business.
For what purpose?
To invest, to pay bills, any number of purposes.
And you kept this money in cash in your safe instead of investing it or putting it in the bank?
Yes.
Mr. Tolland, I put it to you that you kept that money in your safe in cash so that there would be no trace of your illegal activities or the income derived from those activities.
That's entirely untrue.
Mr. Tolland, I have here a pad of paper and a pencil. Will you write your name, please?
I object. I don't see the connection, Mr. District Attorney.
I will connect the signature in a moment, Your Honor.
Very well.
Just write your name, please, Mr. Tolland.
All right. Here.
No. Just hold it for a moment, please. I'm not ready to use the signature yet. Now, Mr. Tolland, you testified that you bought the Unique Development stock from Mr. Donovan, believing that the money was going to be used to expand Mr. Donovan's business.
Yes.
How much money did you invest?
Oh, about $50,000.
Did you ever investigate the corporate setup of Unique Developments?
No.
Did you know that no such corporation existed?
No.
Mr. Tolland, you mean that you invested $50,000 in a business and took no steps to find out whether your money was safeguarded?
Yes. I was satisfied as long as dividends kept coming in, and, well, I trusted Donovan.
Very touching, Mr. Tolland. Oh, I'm ready for that paper now.
What?
The paper with your signature on it.
Oh, yeah. Here.
Yes. Your Honor, I offer this paper in evidence.
I object. What possible connection has this signature with the case in hand?
You said you would make a connection, Mr. District Attorney.
The connection is this. While I was questioning Mr. Tolland, he executed a rather complicated design on this piece of paper beside his signature. I believe it is called doodling. On the plans of the Smythe robbery, there is an almost exactly similar design.
What? Your Honor, I object. This is pure humbug and
trickery. One moment, Counselor. May I see the two documents in question?
Here they are, Your Honor.
It is irregular, but I believe the connection is clear. I overrule the objection.
Exception.
That's all, Mr. Tolland.
Your Honor, the defense rests.
The state also rests.
Your Honor, I move that the case be dismissed on the...
Overruled. Proceed with your summation, please.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I ask you to consider well the character of the man who is now on trial. James Tolland is a solid, respectable businessman. Do you think it remotely possible that James Tolland is a criminal? In heaven's name, what inducement is there for him to have turned to a life of crime? He had everything for which most people struggle all their lives. Do you think it probable or possible that he would jeopardize all that he had for the sake of a few extra dollars? Look at the evidence. What is this evidence against him? The accusation of any hysterical, vindictive, unbalanced girl who confessed that she was herself a criminal. Do you think that such a woman would stop at anything if she wanted revenge? There is the confession of Henry Donovan, repudiated by him.
And you have heard the defendant himself explain that his connection with Donovan was a legitimate business deal. What other evidence is there? Well, there is a doodle. I am sorry to have to waste your time discussing such nonsense. The essential point about it is that anyone can draw these little impromptu designs. Many people frequently do while they are thinking. And all of such designs have a marked similarity. That is all there is to be said about the matter. I ask you to weigh this inconsequential evidence against the character and reputation of James Tolland and form the only conclusion that can be drawn from the facts. Your verdict must be not guilty.
The prosecution will sum up.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, my most learned colleague has asked you to look at the facts of James Tolland's life. I ask you to look behind those facts to the truth. It is true that James Tolland had everything for which most men spend their lives to attain. That is precisely why he became a criminal. He wanted new worlds to conquer. He wanted to pit his brains against the whole of society and win. James Tolland didn't become a criminal for money. He did it for fun, for excitement, for danger, to exercise his wits. James Tolland is a criminal genius. What other evidence has been offered? The accusation of Esther Lewis. How do you think that girl would endanger her immortal soul with a heartless, vindictive lie upon her deathbed? No, she wanted to speak the truth. She insisted on speaking the truth to James Tolland's undoing. There is the confession of Henry Donovan, repudiated, to be sure. But you have heard a number of reputable, honest witnesses testify that Donovan signed that confession of his own free will. Why did he repudiate that document? Because he was afraid. Because between the time he signed it and the time he appeared in this courtroom, someone had threatened his life unless that document were repudiated. And what is the defendant's story? An incredible tale of buying stock in a non-existent corporation. Does that sound like the action of an astute businessman? No, it is a clumsy and obvious lie. Finally, there is the design drawn by James Tolland on a piece of paper in this courtroom, and the design almost identical in form found upon the plans for the robbery of the Smythe diamonds. Put all these things together and there can be but one conclusion. Well, let me put it to you another way. If you assume that James Tolland is innocent, that Donovan was lying, that Esther Lewis was lying, you get an assortment of the most fantastical, nonsensical, improbable facts and coincidences that make no sense at all. If, on the other hand, you assume that Tolland is guilty, all of those facts fall into their proper places to form a reasonable, coherent story. There can be but one conclusion drawn from these facts. That James Tolland is guilty as charged.
The judge instructed the jury, and they withdrew to consider their verdict, to ponder over the evidence and decide whether James Tolland was an innocent man entangled in a net of circumstantial evidence, or whether he was, in fact, a master criminal, the mastermind of one of the most clever crime rings ever organized. We will bring you their verdict in just a moment. And now we take you back to the courtroom where the jury is about to deliver its verdict.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached the verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
How do you find?
We find the defendant, James Tolland, guilty as charged.
James Tolland was sentenced to a long term in prison and has gone down in the annals of crime as one of the most clever criminal organizers of all time. A man who masterminded crime and was brought down by one chance in a thousand. Famous jury trials, the drama of the courts drawn from actual courtroom cases. This is a Grace Gibson radio production directed by Lawrence H. Sessel.